Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fiction File podcast, where we explore the wide world of narrative entertainment, from movies to literature, and everything in between. My name is Jason Boyd. I'm the editor of Fiction File, and I'm joined remotely today by managing editor Corinne Asbell. Hey, Corinne.
Hey, guys.
Okay, and also somewhere in cyberspace, we have finally back from a long voyage. We have associate editor Dalton Drake. What's up, Dalton?
Oh, not much. Just back from whatever cyber grave I was in.
Very good. Well, we're glad you're resurrected and with a new name nonetheless. So,
Yes.
You may, if you listen to old episodes, hear McKay. Dalton is now a Drake. So there you go. Congratulations.
Thank you. Got married and
became a dragon.
Well, rather than my wife taking my name or me taking my wife's name, we decided to come up with a new name for us. And so that is now why I'm a Drake and not a Thompson or a McKay.
Sweet.
Oh, see, I thought it was like a better story, like you guys were dragons or something now. No. Thanks for ruining it for me, Dalton. Damn.
I mean, there's always a dragon.
If we want to get super technical, unless we're doing an episode on the Uncharted series, which is where the last name comes from, then.
I like it.
Maybe later on, we'll talk about my last name and
your new Uncharted relationship to Nathan Drake.
Yes. Okay. Besides the fact that it's on my cosplay list.
Right. So, well, I guess we can guess that we're not doing title today.
Nope.
Or else we would have spoiled the show.
Yeah.
So today we'll be pouring over a single work of fiction. After we introduce this work of art, we'll discuss what makes it enjoyable, what makes it a work of art in the first place, what makes it universally relatable, and finally we'll talk about what it could have done better. So now that we have our format, what piece of narrative entertainment are we talking about today, Corinne?
I got to say something real quick. I didn't want to interrupt you for the first time in my life ever, but you kind of ruined the segue when you say, hey, do you like my segue?
No, it improves it.
Oh, okay. So today we're going to be discussing Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. The screenplay was written by Phil Lord and Rodney Rothman and was directed by Rothman, Bob Persichetti, and Peter Ramsey. The movie, which was produced by several production companies, seriously, like six of them, which including Columbia Pictures, Sony Pictures Animation, and Marvel Entertainment, was released on December 14th, 2018. It was distributed by Sony Pictures. Shameik Moore, Jake Johnson, Haley Steinfeld, John Mulaney, and Nicolas Cage were some of the many actors who lent their vocal talents to the characters.
Bitten by a radioactive spider in the subway, Brooklyn teenager Miles Morales suddenly develops mysterious powers that transform him into the one and only Spider-Man. When he meets Peter Parker, he soon realizes that there are many others who share his special high-flying talents. Miles must now use his newfound skills to battle the evil Kingpin, a hulking madman who can open portals to other universes and pull different versions of Spider-Man into our world.
And a Spider-Woman.
And a Spider-Woman.
Thank you very much. So, very good. But let's go over critical reviews real quick just before we dive into this one. So IMDb has an 8.4 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, 97% for critics, 93% for audience. Metacritic has an 87, and users on Metacritic put it at 8.8. So, pretty good. What makes Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse enjoyable is our first topic. Let's go, Kareem, you want to start this one?
Sure. What makes Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse enjoyable? Everything. Yeah. Everything. Oh, elaborate? Okay.
Yes, please. Yes.
Everything's about this movie is enjoyable, and I won't hear anything else from y'all. I mean, it's well-written, it's got amazing characters, a fantastic plot that's full of depth, with some dark scenes, some humor, excitement, and even a heartwarming message to round it all off. But to be honest, it's the animation and the different styles that are used that make it the most enjoyable. The art style is beautiful, but it has a very unique look. There's really not anything else that even comes close. like, you can't compare it to anything else. It's literally a first. And the way the different spider people are animated, the way Miles' world looks like when the other universes collide, it's just really hard to describe how amazing it is. Visually, it's stunning. And honestly, this movie is really the entire package. It's a celebration of everything Spider-Man, and you can really tell that the writers, the animators, and directors were really hardcore, dedicated Spider-Man fans.
Oh yeah, I can believe that. As far as the style, I think it most closely resembles the MTV Spider-Man. Like, no one, I don't think anyone really remembers that one, but it's close. It's the closest thing I can describe it or compare it to.
I just love the fact that, you know, you've got all these different, like, textures, and they just kind of melded together, and you can literally see the different universes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good points. And it is really, it's visually just pretty, and with the different universe concept they have, it really works well with that style. So, Dalton, what do you think makes Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse enjoyable?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's Spider-Man, and that makes it enjoyable to me by default. I mean, there's nothing I won't watch that does, involving, you know, the world's friendliest wall crawler. But this movie especially had quite a few interesting twists, not only in the plot, but also in the way that the visuals were handled, and the characters. You really couldn't guess what one shot was going to look like, or what one character was going to feel like or act like from one moment to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really made it a genuinely fun experience with a lot of heart. It wasn't cookie cutter at all. Like, there were so many things about this movie that kept you guessing, even if you knew Spider-Man as a character and had been following him for a long time, because they're all different Spider-Men, different universes, and they played by different rules. So I really enjoyed that I didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, and kind of what makes it fun. Yeah. So for me, unless Kareen has something to piggyback on there, from my point, I think what makes it enjoyable is honestly just the comedy. Which I think is obvious, but I'll be honest. When I first watched this movie, I was on my laptop, and my significant other was watching it rather intently, but I was just kind of doing it passively. But when I heard John Mulaney doing Spider-Ham, I had to stop what I was doing. And, you know, Nicolas Cage is the noir Spider-Man, is really well cast and very, you know, for humor wise, it's perfect. And he really serves it. But, you know, I read a lot of comic books as a kid that were Spider-Man comic books, and I watched Spider-Man cartoons and all of that. But I've been kind of out of it for the last several years. So. I kind of, going into this, I wasn't like, oh, I want to watch this because of all these Spider-Men and, you know, Miles Morales. I didn't know anything about the kid. So I was like, I don't know. It's not my Spider-Man. I'm not that interested. But the comedy is what got me in the door, you know. And then I'll talk about later how I kind of learned to love all the other elements. But for me, it was really just the comedy that made it enjoyable and accessible.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe friends.
I specifically enjoyed Fat Peter Parker. So Fat Thor didn't do it for me. Fat Thor made me incredibly like angry at Marvel. I was just like, come on. Like they made him into a meme. He was like my favorite Avenger, and then I was so mad, but like Fat Peter Parker works.
Well, it's because they didn't make him into a joke. There was some humor, but like Fat Thor was just the butt of all jokes. Like if they had taken the time to like really expand on his depression, like, you know, from Asgard being destroyed and letting people down, and like if they'd really expanded it and still kept some jokes, it would have been okay. But Fat Thor was just a joke.
Yeah, but here they actually did go into it. They actually did give him character development. There's a character reason why he's overweight. He ate his feelings. He stopped taking care of himself because he just didn't care anymore. So, all that depression aside, he was a funny character, because he could make fun of himself in that regard.
Yeah, I think what really, really sold it though was the casting of Jake Johnson.
Heck yeah.
Which, as I assume most of y'all know, like our audience, but Jake Johnson, Nick from New Girl, is like his biggest, I guess, one of his most well-known roles. And that's him. That's every character he ever plays. He just plays himself with different names.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Good points all. And yeah, Fat Thor to me, it was just cringy. But
still hot though. I just gotta say that. Sorry.
Is it just me, or she's still hot?
I like a dad bod. I'm sorry.
Yikes. That's a freaking granddad bod. That's a great, great granddad bod.
I'm not sure you understand how aging works, Jason.
Yes, well, you know. What makes Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse a work of art? That's our next topic. Thank you for the transition. Jason, what do you think? Do you want to keep it on this one? Yes, I do. Thank you very much. It really... If you guys don't mind, I'll just keep this one.
I might.
Laugh at your own jokes.
Well, yeah.
You know, I might. Like, no, I might, because earlier you're like, unless Corrine has something to say, and then you keep on continuing on with your sentence.
I gave you a second.
Not I gave a you chance. A second. And a I half. Said I wasn't going to interrupt you, and now you've made me interrupt you.
Oh, okay. Well,
shame.
You have the floor. You have the floor.
Well, no, we've already moved on.
Okay. Well, if I had the vocal talents of Dalton, I might just do this, you know, and I could replicate everyone's voices. It'd be great. Hey. But
you'll never capture our charm and wit.
I know. All I have to do is just pretend I hate me. but that doesn't
make any sense. Dalton doesn't hate you.
He plays it off well, but yes. I think he does. But what makes Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse a work of art? So for me, I'll keep it if you guys don't mind, honesty. It really is gorgeous. And, you know, Corrine covered that before, but I'm not really a fan of the whole CGI cartoon style, which is kind of another reason why I wasn't, like, waiting for this movie.
Shame.
I know, but it really works in this movie. They did a good job, and I think it, you know, the blending of the different styles was done really seamlessly, or, you know, rather, I guess you could kind of see the seams at times, but it worked, you know?
They were deliberate, not just because they didn't know how to do it, yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, the noir Spider-Man scenes, you're like, why is all the color gone, you know? But it was really well done, and I'll talk a little bit later about, you know, did it need to be a cartoon? But I think
they
do a lot of things that really it would have cost billions of dollars to do in a movie.
Yes.
But they're able to pull it off in a cartoon, and they do it in a really beautiful way. And I think it does kind of further what a cartoon can do, what an animated film can do, what have you. So to me, you know, even though I am kind of cynical, it did make it more of a work of art because of the way they pulled it off. So,
oh yeah.
I can't believe that, like, you weren't, like, literally, I don't understand how we're friends. Like, you weren't, like, revved up to go see this. I saw this movie, like, a month before it was even in theaters. Like,
I wish I had those kind of connections.
You did. You have PlayStation, and Sony emailed everyone tickets.
What?
Yeah.
I was not informed about this. Thank you, Sony.
It was an email. I didn't actually get to it in time because I was at work, but a mutual friend of ours did. And we stood in line at North Park for like an hour because it was one of those like oversold, or like, you know, we're going to give out, there's 40 seats and we're going to give out 300 tickets type thing.
Jeez.
So and we stood in line. It was the best day of my life because the movie's so good. I don't understand how you waited so long, Jason.
You know, I survived somehow. I don't know how I did it. But I'm dead inside, but not on the outside. But Kareem, for you, what made it a work of art? Since you stood in line for it, what made it such a work of art that made it worth it?
Well, I mean, I waxed poetic a bit earlier about the art style and the animation of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which I can tell you right now, I'm already going to be tired of saying that by the end of this. And it's truly a work of art. But you told me that I'm not allowed to just talk about the animation for every topic, even though I want to. And that's literally the best thing about the movie. But there you go, raining on my parade again. But what also makes this work of art is it revived the viewing audience from the kind of Spider-Man fatigue we'd been having. It reminded or taught those, like Jason, that didn't know that Peter Parker is not the end-all be-all of Spider-Man heroes. I mean, when this movie came out, we had already had three different Spider-Man reboots. And while I love me some Tom Holland Spider-Man, it was feeling a bit stale. Now, this could be because Spider-Man is the hottest property that Sony holds the movie rights to, and so that's why we see so much of it, but who really knows? But in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the way the story is able to seamlessly introduce the different characters and makes the story make sense for being a kind of world collide adventure and introduced to us to a different side of Peter Parker than we've previously seen. And when I say we, I mean the people that have just watched the movies, which is not me. I've read the comics. And don't get me started. Don't get me started on One More Day. We're not going down that road. But it all makes sense somehow, even if your experience is previously limited to just Parker in the different movie verses. And I think the fact that the star of the movie is Miles Morales, and this is his origin story, which is new to most people, it was always going to be awesome. I mean, since Miles is a Brian Michael Bendis brainchild, of course it was going to be great. Which, fun fact, Miles Morales was actually created due to Donald Glover tweeting he wanted to be Spider-Man, and Bendis just loved the idea.
I could see it.
But then made him like, he then made him like 10 years too young for him to play him. But
well, no, I just the idea of being a black Spider-Man. Although yeah. Miles is black and Puerto Rican.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, it's just great. I mean, because like I've read a lot of different, like I've read the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man. I've read the Ghost Spider, Spider-Gwen series. Now, I haven't really read the Spider-Noir, Spider-Ham, or Penny and her spider. Like, I haven't really read a lot of that. I did afterwards. But before this movie came out, they had actually been like a comic run of Into the Spider-Verse, which it's not the same at all. I mean, it's got like so many more Spider-Men, and there's a whole thing with like the vampires wanting to eat the spider totems and that. It's a whole thing. But this movie was just—it's just great. I'm gonna stop talking because I'm gonna go off all day about this movie and then the comics. And so, Dalton, how about you?
Yeah, and I also don't want to hear about spiders eating things.
I don't know.
Spiders weren't eating things. The vampires were eating the spider totems.
Oh, that's so even better.
That's what I was gonna say.
The spider totem from the spider universe.
Okay. Well, I think Kareem might be a fan. Dalton, what do you think, though, about Spider-Man and Spider-Man? No, I mean, clearly, it's now 2-for-2 between this and Star Wars that Kareem sweeps the board. But what makes Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse a work of art, Dalton?
Well, for me, coming from a writer's perspective, it's the spin on the classic coming-of-age tale. There's a lot to unpack in that alone. You have physical and emotional changes, which are made worse in the film by his superpowers. Mm-hmm. Because for comedy's sake, he's having trouble figuring out when people say, oh, well, you're going to be going through some changes, which of those changes they meant. Because originally he just thinks he's getting these powers for no reason. I don't think he even recognizes that he was bitten, until like after all this stuff starts happening to him. And he's like, oh wait, I was bitten by a radioactive spider. But then you also have familial pressures and anxieties, grappling with questions of morality, facing the reality of your physical and mental limitations. You're dealing with raging hormones. There's a lot there, and we see like a very wide spectrum displayed in this work. Mm-hmm. And that for me, the human side of this, makes it the most art for me.
Yeah. Which, incidentally, if a radioactive spider actually bit you, you would just die.
Not necessarily. Yeah,
assuming the spider survived the fallout.
Yeah, this is just from watching Chernobyl. This is what to understand.
No, the spider would have to be venomous, and it would have to be carrying such a huge load of radioactive isotopes or whatever they do that it would kill you. Spiders are small; they can't be that radioactive.
I think in radioactivity, a little dab will do you.
I mean, if he's radioactive enough to make you have superpowers, he's probably radioactive enough to kill you.
That point, yes, I'll give you that. But here's the thing, though. We're surrounded by radioactivity, period. Like, already. So we're used to a little bit, anyways.
It's a little different.
Well, yeah, unless you're a son of Krypton.
You've got gamma rays, beta rays, you got different forms of radiation. Mm-hmm. I mean, your microwave uses radiation, anyway.
Let's table this discussion for the science podcast next week.
All right.
Oh, okay.
What makes Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse universally relatable? Let's move on. And Dalton, would you like to take this topic?
Yes. So universal relatability definitely comes in the form of Miles Morales. He continues this tradition of Spider-Man protagonists being some of the most relatable superheroes out there. While Batman is relatable to a lot of people because he has no powers, it's harder to relate to him because he's a billionaire. Spider-Man, Peter Parker, may have powers, but he lives in a modest suburban home, has a day job that treats him like garbage, has problems with romance and relationships, and a lot of other mundane things that his powers don't really help him with. I mean, I think of those, the only one that really helps him or gives him an edge is the fact that he can take pictures of himself as Spider-Man because he is Spider-Man. I mean, that is how he got his job. But for Miles, this is amplified because he's even more typical. He's awkward. He has issues with his confidence. He's under a lot of pressure from his parents, especially his father. When he comes into his powers, it makes all of these issues worse, not better. It's like if you have all these issues, but then you were suddenly given a huge part in a big blockbuster movie that you were totally unprepared for.
Yeah. No, and that's that's the metaphor that I think makes Spider-Man so good. Mm-hmm. is it's taking that enhancing, exaggerating style that, you know, science fiction, fantasy, and speculative fiction as a whole can do, and taking real problems and amplifying them. So
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great point. And definitely that's what makes it relatable, at least in one sense. So, Kareem, what do you think makes this one universally relatable?
Well, for me, this movie is about acceptance. I mean, like Dalton mentioned, Miles has pressures with his family, with his father specifically, who struggled with accepting Miles for who he is and encouraging him to be more. And, you know, like a good father, he didn't tarnish his son's illusions about his Uncle Aaron, who he thought was just kind of like a drug-slinging degenerate, but was actually, you know, the Prowler.
Spoilers, yeah. Spoilers, spoiler alert, spoilers.
The movie's been out a little bit.
I hadn't seen it until, like, maybe 3 months ago.
Okay, but let me ask you this. Would you have listened to this podcast if you hadn't seen the movie?
Hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully not.
Well,
this is a spoilery podcast to begin with. Yes.
Do we just should have a blanket spoiler alert on all our podcasts?
Yeah, probably. Anyway, go on.
Anyways,
that's a big one though. That's like, no, I am your father. Big.
I mean,
I'll make sure to put a spoiler alert on this episode, and we'll just do that from now on.
Okay.
Just, all right, continue.
Like, blanket spoiler alert from the future for everything, especially if I'm talking. But so, and then there's Miles just wanting to be accepted at his school. He's the new kid, and he's just received some weird powers, which he's struggling to accept in himself. But by the end of the movie, we see Miles, he's grown so much, but he's also taught others to accept him and let him be who he wants to be. And to me, this story is just about wrestling with others' expectations and learning to live up to your own potential. And you see that, like, through the different ways, like, the other spider people are kind of like, well, we're just going to leave you behind. We don't think you can do this. And then, you know, fat Spider-Man's like, oh, I guess I'll just stay in this world because someone's got to close it. And he not only learns to accept himself, and you see, like you can literally see the moment when Miles accepts himself for exactly who he is, when he jumps off the building. You know, you get that long, glorious, beautiful dive, that beautiful animation. And it's just like, there is the moment Miles fully becomes Spider-Man. He fully accepts himself for who he is, his flaws, his talents, his powers. And that's just, I mean, obviously, don't go jump off a building to find acceptance.
Right.
That's not the relatable part of the story.
Should put another warning on this one.
Jumping off a building will not make you accept yourself.
In the last few seconds, it might.
You might be like, oh my God, I wish I had only loved myself more. But
exactly.
Jesus, we sound horrible. That's what it is. The movie is just about learning to accept who you are. Like, Miles didn't have to make changes. Like, he didn't have to change who he was to make his father accept him, you know? He didn't have to change who he was to make the other spider friends accept him. Spider friends. But
spider friends.
But he just had to realize, I'm worth it. Mm-hmm. I can do this. You know, he had to own his own self.
I'm brave enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like me.
Exactly. And then jump off a building.
Yeah, Stuart Smiley could do that. I think that's a good point. And I mean, I hate to just kind of repeat what everyone's already said in a way, but I feel like the way they did Miles was really similar to the way Peter Parker began in the comics, except not being super white and buttoned up. But it was authentic for, you know, what we have today and probably what we did back then too. But, like, it just felt like a real teenager. And that, to me, was the idea of Spider-Man, was about a teen being a superhero. You know, it was kind of, and then having to deal with teen things, and that, you know, it's almost more insurmountable to deal with your teenage years than it is to deal with the supervillains. But it was crystal clear at all times that this is a kid who's having to live up to an awful lot. And, I mean, we even have that, where they talk about that, the other spider friends talk about that, where they go, you know, like, you know, we should cut him some slack. He is, you know, whatever. We remember what it was like. Mm-hmm. But I think we've all felt like that at one point or another, you know, that we are kind of still young and having to deal with more than we, you know, should have to do at that point. Like, you know, I'm 34 and I felt like that last night when I burned my pizza. I was just, you know, you just stand there and you just look at the pizza and you're just like, I don't know if I'm up for this. But, like, but you know, I'm going to have to start another pizza.
Or like me, anytime I have to pick up a phone and try and call someone.
Right. It's just kind of like, I do not want to adult today. I just don't want to do this. And we know what it was like when we were young.
I hope y'all never get bit by radioactive spiders.
I'd be like Spider-Ham. That would be my persona. I would be the Spider-Ham of the Spider-Verse.
I actually think you would do something else with all the web, but this is a family show.
What?
Yeah. I don't know, but I want to hear this one later. But let's move on before we get the X rating.
Fiction for a podcast after dark.
I like it.
Okay, but someone's got to get it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So what could Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse have done better? Kareem, you filthy mouth person. Let's continue with you. What would Spider-Man, Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse, if I can get it right, have done better?
First of all, how very dare you? For two reasons. For one, saying that I have a filthy mouth. And for two, suggesting that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is not a perfect movie. How dare you?
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry you waited in line for this.
Right? I mean, okay.
But I gotta, for waiting on big IPs, I don't know if I probably have shared the story when we did Indiana Jones of
one. Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But I mean, honestly, there is something that could be done to make the movie a tiny bit better, but also at the same time, honestly, it couldn't be done. You know, it would just hurt the movie because it would make it drag out. It's one of those ones like, you know, if we did this, yeah, it would be great, but then the movie would be like 42 hours long and nobody's going to watch that. But
except you, apparently.
41 is my limit.
They could have made it into 42. A series, maybe.
They can't make another Spider-Man series after, you know, the 90s Spider-Man, which is basic. Which, did True. You know that 90s Peter Parker is a Brady? Like, I can't remember the name, but his voice actor is a Brady. Like, the same guy that did Prince Eric in The Little Mermaid. Greg Brady? Is that a Brady?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I was watching it on Disney Plus, like, a couple months ago, and, like, I was like, I know that voice. It's Prince Eric. Anyways.
Is it odd that the 90s animated renditions of both Spider-Man and Batman have become... number one, the most iconic, and number two, the best?
No, because
Or is that nostalgia talking?
I mean, I've watched the 90s Spider-Man and the 90s Batman. Some, I mean, there's better looking properties that have come after it, but the story and the voice actors, I mean, honestly, that's part of what it is. I mean, there's some nostalgia to it, but they're just also really good.
You're right.
But, I don't know. As far as Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, I really feel that some of the other spider friends got shafted on the runtime. Like, I mean, they're really these interesting characters, and I would have enjoyed seeing a little bit more of the noir Spider-Man or Penny Parker and her little... It's just called Spider, even though it's like spelled SP/DR. But, you know, but right. I think if we had added more movie time for them and then Spider-Ham, if they'd had larger, you know, beefier roles, then it would have really just dragged the movie out way too long. And they did provide some good humor in the parts they had, and they're good characters. I just wanted a bit more. So yeah. I really am a big Spider-Gwen fan. Like I mentioned earlier, I've read the Spider-Gwen. I'm reading Ghost Spider. I mean, I love Spider-Gwen as a character. So
I have a feeling that she's going to get some love pretty soon.
Well, yeah, you know. There was that little after credit scene. Mm-hmm. But I'm really excited that she got a larger part. And I think Hailee Steinfeld was a great actress for her. And just her comics run was really amazing. So it was really good to see that she had a larger part. Because, you know, they could have gone with, you know, anybody else, but they chose Spider-Woman. But
it's Spider-Gwen.
Well, no, in her universe, she's actually like upset because she goes by Spider-Woman, but after they find out who she is, then everyone just calls her Spider-Gwen. It's a good run. If you haven't read it, you really should give it a read.
After I've read the dozens upon thousands of things that I already have to read.
Yes, exactly.
You need to
read everything I've given you on my list first. Yes.
Why don't I have a list?
Well, get in line. Like you did for this movie.
The only person that gives me a list of books to read is, well, I'm not talking about this on the podcast. Dalton, what do you think Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse could have done better?
Dalton, please, yes, take the shame off of Kareem.
I don't know. I want to know this mysterious benefactor now.
I think it's a certain person who might be listening to this podcast.
Oh, gotcha. All right. Well, I'll.
Not this podcast. I'm going to tell him the podcast has been deleted and it's no more.
Okay. Well, this movie kind of floored me when I first saw it. In a lot of ways, it has great pacing, great characters, a great soundtrack. Like Kareem said, there's really nothing you could change about it without hurting it as a whole. I think this is one time when, as much as I wanted to find fault with something for the sake of having a discussion about it, I really just couldn't. It's delightful. I mean, if I do want to find fault with something, it's just that it made me cry, and I really hate being made to cry.
I mean, that's a good reason to find fault with something.
Yeah.
Into
the Spider-Verse made me cry, so boycott it.
Another thing that is like to find fault with it is that it made me feel a little bit bad for Kingpin.
For like a nanosecond.
Yeah, but it's still, the nanosecond was just enough.
I guess. I was just like, oh, and then immediately he's just like choking someone. You're like, oh.
He's garbage again. Cool. All right, that's all right. Jason will find fault with it.
Bringing me down,
yes.
Man.
Yes, I will bring you guys down a peg.
Right, okay,
so for me, what Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse could have done better is not be animated.
Go to your room.
I'm sorry. I know it's kind of ridiculous, and it's going to upset, obviously, Kareem and some other people out there maybe listening. But I'm just not a big fan of cartoon stuff, or really rather, I prefer it to be cartoonish. It's going to be cartoonish. You know, it needs to be like for kids. But the hybrid gave me a bit of an uncanny, or not even, well, you know, like Rick and Morty and stuff, but it's goofy. It's a romp. This, like, it was like, it gave me a kind of uncanny valley situation, especially like emotionally, you know, like it didn't quite look like a human, and then it didn't quite look like a, you know, non-human, the whole analogy with robots. Anyway, I wanted it to connect to the characters, you know. I wanted to connect to Miles, and I kind of did, but then I remembered they're just drawings, essentially, and it kind of ruined it, you know. So I kept getting pulled in and out of it. But I'd love to see a live-action version of this, is what I'm trying to say. Although, like I said earlier, it'd probably be way too expensive because just the kind of stuff they're able to do with animation is, you know, so much easier to do. Even if it does take years to accomplish, it's still easier to do fiscally than a live-action.
I don't know. Version. Like, the kind of animation that they went into this, it might actually have been about the same price just to do the special effects, because they'll obviously be able to do some practical too.
Yeah, I mean, they already set up Miles Morales in the MCU Spider-Man. So, I think you'll get a Miles Morales story pretty soon. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it'll be this Miles Morales story.
No.
Yeah.
I think it'll just be like you know, Peter gets old and the Miles Morales, sort of like similar to Ultimate Spider-Man, even though this is the actual
Batman Beyond.
Well,
right.
This is like MCU is, as far as I'm aware, set on our Earth, which I forget which Earth is it. Is it 616 or is that just the Earth that Spider-Man's from or Miles Morales is from? I don't remember, but the MCU is set on our Earth. So, like I said, I don't think, like you said, we're not going to see a multiverse situation really going on there, even though it's kind of been, like, introduced.
Yeah, I think they already set that up, too. Doctor Strange?
Yeah, but I don't think we're going to be getting a kind of, like, worlds collide kind of thing here. I do think we might just get, you know, a Miles Morales bitten by a, you know, spider.
That's the cleaner way to do it, but we'll see. I think they'll probably introduce some character through bringing him in from another reality at some point in the MCU.
Spider-Gwen.
Maybe, but I'm thinking more like you know, like a character that you maybe want to see that hasn't really materialized yet in the movies.
I would kind of want to see, actually, I think it's Superior Spider-Man, which is the Spider-Man where Doc Ock takes over Peter Parker's brain, and he becomes Spider-Man.
Oh yeah, we did. I did a piece on that in the Body Swap Fiction. So if you want to read more about that, you can go look at that article.
Hey, bring it back around again. Look at me.
Love it. Very good. Yeah, that was a good article. I think we. Hopefully, you guys don't hate me too much about that, but you know.
Not for this.
Oh, good. Okay. Well,
I think we can all agree that we would like to see a live action Miles Morales. Right.
Story. Yeah.
So that's not controversial.
There you go. Good. Good. So my final thoughts, because let's move on to final thoughts about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and I'll go ahead and keep it. As someone who's never read a Miles Morales comic, but has read a ton of old Spider-Man comics, I actually feel like this was probably the closest any movie has ever gotten to the sensibility and feel that Spider-Man was imbued with from the start. I mean, I feel like Kareem really kind of like said it earlier, where it sort of took the bad taste out of people's mouth about Spider-Man. Because there are so many reboots and everything. It seemed like it was a return to form. And I think it's because it kind of reminded us that Spider-Man isn't just like a story about a guy who's got spider powers or, a Tobey Maguire meme or any of this other stuff. It set it back in it's supposed to be relatable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it also made me, I didn't know Miles Morales, but I really like him a lot. Honestly, he's way more interesting than Peter Parker.
He's a really good character.
He's a good character. So, I mean, I think they should bring him into the MCU. He could definitely work alongside a white Spider-Man. There's no reason that they can't coexist in the MCU.
Yeah.
So,
they coexist in the PlayStation Spider-Man game.
Yeah. I was going to say that for every one reboot movie that we got, we got at least two reboot games, and that only added to the fatigue.
Right.
Although I will defend the Spider-Man PS4 Spider-Man to the death.
I haven't played that one, but I really want to.
You should. Did you ever play any of the Arkham games?
I played all of the Arkham games except for I didn't finish Origins. Let's see, and then I played every Spider-Man game up until the PS4 one, I think.
Okay, well, if you like, I think it was PS1 Spider-Man. That was the really good one. And you like the Arkham games, you will love PS4 Spider-Man. It's amazing. But what I was going to say is, Jason was talking again.
Surf the web.
Jason,
surf the web.
I hate you.
That's from the original Spider-Man PS1 game. It's so good.
Jason was talking about how I brought back the Spider-Man fatigue point and he was bringing it back. But the funny thing is this movie, I love how it pokes fun of that. Because every time a new spider person comes in, they're like, here's my story, you know? And then Miles is like, this is it, the last one, finally. And then, you know, they introduce like some of the memes, like the horrible Spider-Man 3, Tobey Maguire, disco, emo Spider-Man, whatever. So.
Yeah.
The movie poked fun of itself.
Yeah.
Which, did you know, I discovered this while I was looking into my notes. You know, we talked about how Jake Johnson's fat Spider-Man, we talked about other people. Did you know Chris Pine was the good Spider-Man, the original Spider-Man of Miles' Earth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
How did I not know this?
Well, I don't know. I
know his voice. You barely even watch the movie. How did you know that?
I recognized the man's voice.
I guess I was just so excited about the movie that I never even processed it.
He maybe didn't watch the movie, but he definitely heard it.
Exactly. I heard every bit of the movie, and then I watched a lot of it.
But no, like I saw that and I'm like, oh wow, I didn't even know that. But anyways. Yes.
All right.
Well, my point, how do I feel? One of my final thoughts about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Thank you for asking, Jason.
Yes, thank you, Corinne. Go on.
To me, this... I'm sorry. I'm just so funny.
Man, y'all only quit laughing at your own jokes.
Let's just pause a minute while the crowd laughs.
Can we just edit a really cheesy laugh track in?
Yeah, there you go.
Assuming you edit.
Yeah. I mean, you got it on your little soundboard over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's a good soundboard. That's not cool. Laughing. This is not a baseball game.
I don't have a laughing one yet. All right.
To me, this movie perfectly captures the sensationalism of the comics. It delivers a fantastic storyline. It's got a very like meta-textual feel with the different art styles, yet it somehow meshes as if it was always meant to be that way. It's got the absurdity of some of the different comic storylines, and to me, it just really changed the game on superhero films. This movie is one I used to judge other superhero movies off of. I mean, like I said, I love the MCU. We just talked about my love for, you know, the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy. But to me, even though this came out after, like, so many other superheroes, it just changed the game. It showed us, like, how you could make a movie and bring all these different elements into the world and just make a really good movie. But the movie, it just makes me feel like I'm in the comic. Mm-hmm. And that just is amazing. And I love every bit of this movie. And I will fight you, Jason, if you try to take my animation away.
Okay. All right, well. Very good.
Okay. Yeah, really, the rim shot, because that was a joke.
Well, I made one. But yes, very good good points there.
I foresee us having to pry that thing from his cold, dead hands.
Yeah. Now that I've gotten it. But
let's just get the login and change the password.
Oh well, if only you had someone willing to give it to you.
You're gonna have to when you're not running podcast. Oh, all right, Dalton.
Final thoughts about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes. So, Into the Spider-Verse might just be one of the most important cultural films in the superhero genre. In doing research for this podcast, what I found were dozens of reviews from members of the African-American, Latino, and especially the Afro-Latino community who cried, finally, a superhero that looks like me. I think that this and Black Panther are two films in vastly different styles that really acknowledge and celebrate the diversity and cultural propriety of their casts. Beyond the technical excellence of this film, beyond its incredible voice talent, style, and soundtrack, Into the Spider-Verse is a film that fully encapsulates the notion that anything is possible and anyone can be under the mask. And that's all I have to say about that.
Well, I think that was enough.
There we go.
Very good. Thank you very much, Don. That's very well put. I'm glad that you were the last thought on this movie. But very well put.
What are you
trying
to say?
No, I'm just saying he brought a seriousness to it is all. And I like the gravity of that because it's very I'm saying I'm going to ignore you for the moment. But you know, great points because yeah, it's definitely a big win for multiculturalism and it's about time. So
yeah, I'm really actually very happy that diversity is starting to not make a comeback. That's not the right it's not the right idiom, but it's finally starting to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
I mean, very recently the change to the Academy Awards the rules for how you can win Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
I think it, you know, at least in media, representation of minorities is finally sort of picking up.
Yeah. And it's a good place to start.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good place to start. It's nowhere near what needs to happen in other places, but that's not our job.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you so much, everybody. Where can I find this streaming, though, if I want to watch it for
the first time?
From beginning to end, the first time, yeah. But, where can I find the streaming, Cree?
Well, luckily for you and everyone else, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is available as part of your Netflix subscription. You would think Disney Plus, but it's not actually a Disney property. You can also rent it digitally from your favorite video store, or you can always buy a physical copy and get a free digital code included. Now, if you do that and you want to help us out, you can hop on over to fictionfile.com and click on our Amazon affiliate link and buy it through Amazon, which will help because Jason keeps trying to get spiders to bite him so he can have superpowers. And we really could use some of those Amazon pennies to help pay his medical supplies and bills.
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much. I do have a fund called Save Jason from the Spiders. You can donate to that now.
That's actually a different fund from this one. That's just because there's a lot of spiders in his apartment complex.
Yes. And there's this friggin' radioactive plant thing next to me, too. And so all the spiders, they walk through it.
Is it named Audrey?
Hmm?
Is the plant named Audrey?
Oh, is that a... Oh, no, sorry. The different movie. Was it Little Shop of Horrors, right?
Yes.
Yes, there you go. Okay.
I got it
20 years later. It's okay.
Oh, plant.
See, there you go. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Kareem, very much. I think that's it for this installment of the Fiction File podcast. Is it not?
No, it's not.
If you wanted
to follow you on social media, Dalton, where would we find you?
Thank you, Kareem.
You can follow me on Instagram at Sword Gaijin. I don't know anymore, man. It's been
Sword
a while.
_Gaijin.
There you go. Sword_Gaijin. It's on the Fiction File site. If you go look under staff, you got all our little buttons there. You can also follow me on Twitter at Dalton and Drake, or
Facebook on the Sword Gaijin cosplay.
There you go. Thank you. It's been a while since I've been back.
I've been editing transcripts. I'm not stalking you.
I am not with it right now.
Very, very good. Well, it's okay, Dalton. You can always go to fictionfile.com and go to our staff page and find everybody. But, Kareem, where can we find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Instagram at nonlinearGirl. And you can also find me on Twitter at nonlinearGirl with a zero. Did you hear I said that? Twitter.
Very
good. It's funny because I'm sitting here like brushing my hair. Twitter.
And for me, I want to just say you can find me on Instagram under Sage Hazard with 2 Z's or Twitter as The Fiction File. Not to be confused with Fiction File Mag, which is the official Fiction File Twitter.
And that's
MAG. MAG as in magazine. And please, if you can find it in your heart, to donate just a few dollars, the price of a cup of coffee.
All right.
To help me from the spiders.
So that's it for this installment.
All right, so I think that's it for this installment of the Fiction File podcast. Thank you, everybody. I want to invite you to fictionfile.com for more scintillating analysis like you heard today. And don't forget to rate us if you like today's episode, which I don't know why you would. And subscribe to make sure you don't miss the next episode. It was a fun one. It was a raucous one. Dalton's back. We're having a party. It's like we're going to go out and not get drunk because we don't do that because we're too old. But still, we're going to go out. Well, there you go. Until then, I want to thank you. And thank you all. And thank you, Kareem. Thank you, Dalton. But I want to thank you, the listener, for spending a little story time with us today. And for Dalton Drake and Kareem Asbell, this is Jason Boyd. And and the Fiction File family wishing you a happily ever after.